This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Heward, not exactly Joe Capp there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
I like Rich Eisen, got a lot of respect for him. I don't think he has this one right. I don't know Pat McAfee. He obviously doesn't know me, as you could hear in the Open Door show every day. But I don't think he has this one right either. Both of them reacted yesterday to the news, quote unquote news, that Mike McDonald was taking down some of the pictures inside the Seahawks facility. And as you heard G say, and Dave Wyman said this yesterday as well, it's just a couple of spots. A lot of the stuff is still up there. They're not tearing down the banners or erasing the history or any of that, but they are allowing this next group to kind of build their own legacy. And both Rich Eisen and Pat McAfee responded yesterday. Let me play you first Rich Eisen, because I think this one is, you know, again, I love Rich. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. He was great. I think that this is one of those things that's hard to fully know when you're not in the city, right? It's sort of like the J-Rod thing we were talking about yesterday. Like when someone says J-Rod, you know that they're not here in Seattle because no one in Seattle calls them that. Listen to Rich Eisen and his sort of takeaway from what happened at the VMAC.
The fact that these photographs are on the wall is not a ghost that is clanking around, you know, and haunting you. Certainly, if the guy who helped put those pictures on the wall is supposedly still part of the organization, like, what are we doing? I was surprised to hear that. Like, to look at the history of your team and the success and go, that's an impediment, is kind of weird to me. As opposed to, we're going to be better than those, or we're going to continue that tradition, or we're going to have a new way of winning, just like the old guys did. Did John Harbaugh say, take all those pictures of Brian Billick down when he showed up there, and this is the guy whose staff he's from? Michigan. I mean, there are ghosts everywhere, if you look at it that way. That was just kind of weird, which makes me also think, was the Pete Carroll transition not as hunky-dory as we make it seem?
Who's making it seem that way? I mean, I think that's the first thing I wanted to focus on. We can debate whether or not you should take stuff down or all of that. Again, I think he's got that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But no. But let's clear this up.
Well, if you're doing national radio, Salk, you saw the memo from the owner.
I said. Yep.
From the owner. That's what you remember. Oh, yeah, you Google it and you see, you know, Jody Allen's and the comments that, you know, Pete's going to have a role here. And
I totally get it. I'm not taking a shot at Rich Eisen at all. I'm just stating that that's the case.
Right.
He's looking at that from a national perspective, whereas I think if you're here in the market, it's been pretty clear now for a while that Pete is not a part of anything. That was a ceremonial thing, and this was not a hunky-dory split.
No.
He told us that on January 11th.
Yeah, I know exactly, precisely where we are and what needs to happen. That's why, you know, I battle because I know where it could go. And there's just sometimes, you know, it's such a fine line to hold on to the edge of the right emphasis and the right focus and the right demand so that you get what you need to get done. And when I felt like I was losing time. Time was waning in the season. And it was coming down to, holy cow, you know, we haven't quite found it yet.
I mean, he's talking there right at the beginning of, hey, I battled here.
And then, okay, what is the essence of the adjustments that are necessary? And that's where the, you know, maybe don't see eye to eye on, you know, because, you know, I see it one way and I think I got a way to fix it. And I'm not going to kind of halfway fix it. I'm trying to fix it so it's perfect. So I've got, you know, real precise and specific thoughts. And they may not see it that way. They may not agree with it. They may not see that that's the right answer, or that's not the answer that makes them feel good.
I mean, he goes on from there.
Yes.
But, I mean, that was in the interview we did with Pete day or two after he, you know, gave his press conference. And it was pretty clear. He talked about the media and, you know, people who don't have, you know, football backgrounds. It was pretty clear that Pete was not happy at all about that.
Yeah,
decision.
And he's not going to have an office in the building. He's not a coach emeritus. It just doesn't happen that way in the NFL. And Pete doesn't want it that way either, right? I mean, that was probably, quite honestly, maybe the mistake made. If you look back at it, like, probably didn't need to do that. Probably didn't need to try to sugarcoat it or put a silver lining on it or celebrate it in that way. Like, you know, you're going to split. And I understand why at that day and that point the organization did it. Because for 14 years, Salk, he's elevated the program right to a place we never experienced.
This feels like the, to bring G's relationship stuff into it. Like, let's just be friends. You're not going to be friends.
No.
Like, you're not going to be friends. Maybe one day, years later, you'll find each other and have a nice conversation or whatever. But you're not going to be friends. This was a divorce. This was a breakup, and Pete's out. And unfortunately, I guess now Rich Eisen's learning about that, which makes sense. Again, no shot taken here. He's a national guy. He's not supposed to know the intricacies of what's going on everywhere. But when I hear it, it's just like, oh.
But it wasn't hunky-dory.
No, I think we should all know that by now. Yes. All right, let me play you the Pat McAfee, because I think you should have a reaction to this here, because obviously you were in Indy. He heard this story, and it reminded him of his own life, of what happened when he was in Indianapolis, and Chuck Pagano and, was it Ryan Gregson, came in to replace kind of the Peyton Manning era.
Crying. Paint over this mural, and I'm just watching as, like, oh, Dallas Clark's on there, watching Dallas's face just get covered up, and the trophies and everything like that. And it's like, okay, so we're not the Colts anymore?
Don't exist. Yeah,
like, so this wasn't, that wasn't good, what just happened in the last. This is a whole new era, a whole new team. I personally hated it. And I was way too young to say anything, but then I get a chance to fly to Tokyo, Japan for a USO tour with Chuck Pagano sitting right next to him, and I was going to retire. Right, I was going to retire because I hated just working for these people. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not like it. I did not enjoy it. I hated the way they operated. Like, I just did not like what was happening. So me and Chuck next to each other, 17 hours. And I just basically
gave it to him.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
I was like, how about day one when you just painted over the entire history of the Colts, took all the photos down. We get it. Is the Indianapolis Chuck and Grigsons? Okay, not the Colts. We understand. Now the Seattle Seahawks are doing the same
thing. Yikes.
All right, first of all, can you imagine being Chuck Pagano and having 17 hours of your punter telling you that you're coaching wrong? Can you imagine how patient he would have had to be in that moment? He's like, you're my lowest level employee. You're a punter. And you're telling me that I'm doing this? Are you kidding me? I just can't imagine how frustrated Chuck Pagano was in that moment and didn't want to say anything or whatever. But that's not really the point here.
And that mural and that history in Indy is different than one wall of a few pictures.
100%.
I mean, if you're, tearing down every placard of every Seahawk that played, if you're ripping down the Super Bowl and the NFC Championship banners and all the names on there in the indoor facility, and you're trying to, in that case, erase the past, I kind of understand where McAfee's coming from.
Sure.
This is one wall of pictures. This is five or six, pretty big moments in Seahawks history down that one hallway. But you know what? It's what's going back up? Yeah, digital pictures and digital boards that are going to be showcasing many of those moments. So, just kind of, again, not a shot at Pat, not ripping Rich. They're not as close to it. They don't have the proximity we do to totally understand the full scope and context of it.
And sometimes that's an advantage, as we've seen, where they have a much better sense of, like, the Russell Wilson situation. Like, sometimes the national folks have it much more right than us. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of those cases where they just kind of, don't know the whole story.
Tear down this wall.
Okay, they're not tearing down any walls, Mr. Reagan. I'm sorry. Mr. They're not Reagan. Doing that. Nobody's tearing down walls.
Tear down this wall.
That's enough. Stop that.
We did that at the old Safeco Field. That's what we did. We tore down those walls and moved them forward. Very different conversation here.
He was saying that you don't see any more pictures of Peyton Manning in a Colts jersey. Is that true? Is that like a whitewash part of history now?
I don't know. That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. I don't know if that's Peyton's people or whatever. And
like,
I know
Peyton's a Bronco only and you don't hear about him as a Colt?
Certainly didn't feel that way in his Hall of Fame induction speech that the Colts were the ones that put on the whole event.
Right.
Players do have to pick Salk, having lived that experience. Like, which organization is going to be kind of showcasing me? Which one's going to be inviting all their people? Which one's, going to fly
the flag? You've lived that experience, of having to choose as a Hall of Famer?
No, but I lived that experience with my Colts teammates.
Ah.
And that Hall of Fame was loaded with Colts teammates, Colts personnel, Colts people put in charge of it, not Broncos people.
Which makes perfect sense. I mean, I barely even think about him as a Bronco. He's a Colt, right?
Yes.
Really? I think of him as a Bronco.
You think of Peyton Manning as a Bronco? What was he there for, like a season and a half?
Just
he can barely
because,
throw.
I know, but it was because of the amount of time spent watching those Super Bowls. I just think of him as a Bronco versus how old I was when he was a Colt.
I think it was four or five years, actually, Salk. I think it was 12 through
half
16.
Half of them, though, he was splitting time with that tall dude who could barely throw.
Brock Osweiler?
Right. I mean, like, he wasn't even a
Montana's
real quarterback at that
they
point.
They drug him to that second Super Bowl.
Oh, my gosh. He was terrible at that point. I mean, like, he could never really throw the ball well, but at least in Indy, he was, like, the man throwing his quacking ducks at everybody who were wide open and catching them all the time. But, I mean,
we get to need to know.
Okay, I guess we'll do that next. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, I didn't know when we woke up this morning it would be like Brock and Salk marriage counseling day here on the show, but that's what's been going on behind the scenes. In the meantime, everyone is trying to counsel what happened at the VMAC here over the last couple of days as the walls have come tumbling down. No, wait, that's not true. All the pictures. No, that's not true either. A few of the pictures are now off the wall so that Mike McDonald can forge his own path and the guys on this team can set their own standard and their own identity, which is exactly what he should be doing. John Schneider on with Wyman and Bob yesterday explained what's really happening and said, yeah, we actually got a lot of feedback from the players on this.
And so I think the players really embraced it. And, you know, listening to Leo the other day, you know, said it great. Like, hey, we're totally going to respect the past and everything that's happened here. And, you know, we got to just got to move forward. You know, it's a young franchise, 1976.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're in those other franchises, like there's areas that, you know, they have a kind of a Hall of Fame area or. And then they're celebrating. They're kind of building their own story as they go. I think we did it with Coach McCarthy in Green Bay too. Like, hey, this is a special area. Let's build our own history, and that's basically it.
Do you think Big Cat thought for a second when he was just sharing and being transparent on Wednesday that Rich Eisen and Pat McAfee would be steaming hot about it?
No.
I mean, do you think it? Yeah,
especially
because he
was like, "This is great. I love it."
Yes, I think honestly, this is why some of the players and I totally get it, and some of the staff over there and people are like, "Oh my gosh." Come on. Know the full context of the story, but that's not the way, you know, the media unfortunately works. And well,
Brock, we can't even like put out a headline about our opinion saying it's great where the headline says something like, you know, here's what's happened. What do Brock and Salk think? And people are like, they're killing the Seahawks. Like nobody wants to spend a second.
Clickbait.
No one wants to ever spend a moment learning about the actual anything.
Because it is pretty cool. Like it is a really, I mean, it was where your eyes went the first day. And when Mike McDonald was up there for that presser and that hoop was still bolted into the stage. Like,
how
are you going to transition from 14 years? You're a young organization. You are 1976, but the guy now stepping out of it was, you know, heralded in the greatest run in the history of the franchise. And transitioning away from that guy, a Hall of Famer in Pete Carroll, to a 36-year-old first-timer who's doing it his way and kind of learning on the fly with his teammates, it's an awesome story. But it's one that certainly became a bit polarized yesterday.
I like
yesterday.
The use of the word heralded. I like that.
Yeah, I just think
that was good.
That
really worked
from.
Perfectly. You don't always drop a word like that, but
no,
that
I
was
don't.
A good one. That one, that set the picture. Beautiful imagery.
Sure.
Are you a tortured poet?
I mean, I read Joe Breeze at the Puyallup Herald growing up, Salk.
Okay.
That was on our doorstep.
Okay. Maybe part of the tortured poets department. I don't know.
Here's the second thing you need to
know. All right, the Mariners going to be off and running now, Brock, now that they have won themselves a series. In fact, swept the Cincinnati Reds.
Going to be sledding. I don't know, running. They're going to be sledding their way.
Is the weather going to be that bad in Colorado?
It's pretty bad. It
What's
was like
that?
70. Well, it's going to be 70 on Sunday.
Sheesh.
But Friday and Saturday, I think at first pitch tonight, it could be like 36 with icy, dewy, snowy. Ugh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're going to see guys all bundled up. I can already see JP in his mask and, you know, guys with sleeves and... It's gonna be a chilly one tonight in the old Rocky Mountains.
If they plan to, you know, have a whole bunch of success here, they're gonna need to keep pitching. John Morosi on with Wyman and Bob says, "Yeah, that's what they're good at."
The Mariner rotation has walked the fewest batters of any rotation in Major League Baseball this year, and they also have struck out, I believe, the second most. And so that dichotomy, bunch of strikeouts, very low walks. That will play over the big 6 months of the regular season. That is going to show up and improve. I really believe that Castillo and Kirby have both thrown the ball better than what their ERAs indicate. This is the ultimate small sample size time of year. So I agree. I think Hancock has done more than a capable job of being the fifth starter in place of Brian Wu. And in Seattle, in this way, their DNA remains intact. This is a rotation-dependent team.
That's what they do.
and it's going to give them a chance night after night after night after night. Are they going to be this elite that they've been the last seven games? Probably not. Probably not. Is it still a friendly ballpark to hit in? Yes, it is. With 5,280 feet that you get to hit at, still advantageous.
Cold weather's probably going to take away some of that.
Probably will. The humidor probably doesn't need to be cranked up quite as much in that stadium today. But, yeah, man, it's kind of, it reminds me, as I'm listening to Morosi there, to fall back on our last story with Pete and the Seahawks, like, this is our identity. We're a pitching team. And because of that, that's the way we're going to play. Give us a chance to win. The last couple of years, when you're dead last in stopping the run and you're a defense team and you're going to stop the run and you can't stop the run, the change was inevitable. And I certainly hope these Seahawks get back to that basic tenet, you know, that basic foundation of what you're going to build your team upon.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, the third thing is that the Kraken season did finally come to an end yesterday, but not really the way you would have hoped. Yes, they won. It makes them the eighth worst team in the league this year, eighth best shot at the number one pick. It's about 6% is what that works out to, but really a disappointing season on so many fronts. I focused on Matty Beniers earlier just because he really did not step up into the next way that everybody thought he would. In fact, kind of regressed, just 37 points in a minus 20 on the season. They'd have to make changes. If they are going to leave cable and are going to try to sell advertising to make that revenue back on free TV, broadcast TV, and Brock, this wasn't bad luck. They didn't get hit with the injury bug this year and miss out on all their best players. They just weren't good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a coaching issue. I've certainly wondered about it in the past. And generally, when they've kind of hit the depths of despair, they've battled back. And I think that is a testament to what Dave Haxtell's done. But they're going to need some kind of change. Maybe it's behind the bench. It's probably personnel-wise on the ice where, quite frankly, they just weren't that good.
So 34, 35, and 13 is eighth worst. That totally speaks to what we felt and I felt all season long. There's like a lot of good teams. You know, typically 500 in the NFL, right? 500 in baseball. You're not the eighth worst. You're not in the bottom third of the league, but you are in hockey. I mean, there's some terrible, terrible teams with worse records, but then there are a lot, and I felt this all season long. That's a good team. That's a good team, mm-hmm. And that's a good team. You're going to watch the playoffs. You know, a lot of good teams. How are you going to get there? How are you going to get there in year number four? Running it back, as you said last hour, does not feel and does not give me any confidence with the current personnel that they can be one of those teams that we're going to be watching in the playoffs.
All right, that's everything you need to know quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. All right. Let's see. I do have a Mariner conversation I want to have with you, Brock. Maybe we'll do that in about a half hour. We've got...
No, I can't do that in a half hour. Why half not? Hour, we do our draft profile.
Well, no, I meant like 8:45-ish, 8:50-ish, after we talk to Troy Faltano.
Oh, okay.
Now, I know at 9 o'clock we got a draft profile.
No, you don't always remember.
I do always remember. And at 9:30, I know that we're going to open up the phone lines, and I'm curious what people are going to have to say today. Mm. Before we do any of it, though, Brock, he's been your number one guy. He's the one that every time his name comes up, you say, ring the bell, this is the player the Seahawks need to take at number 16. And he's going to join us. Left tackle, guard, center, who knows? Troy Faltano. Coming up next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
I know there's a group of people right now wondering, hey, where's G. Scott's music? And I apologize. G. joined us an hour early today. We bumped him. And that's not something we do for just anybody, right, Brock? It takes a lot to bump a regularly scheduled guest, especially one of the magnitude of G. Scott. But when you have the opportunity to get Troy Faltano on the show, you say yes to whatever time works for him. And that was right now. And so joining us right here is Troy Faltano. Good morning, Troy. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing? I'm doing well.
That's awesome. Well. How's everything going? We're under a week before the draft. What is that like emotionally for you right now? Do you think about it a lot? Are you just not focused on it at all? Like, where are you at?
Yeah, the more I try not to think about it, the more I end up thinking about it. So it's kind of like I'm just trying to stay busy. You know, I've done everything in my power to put my best foot forward. Like, there's no more meetings. There's no more Zoom calls. No more combine, pro day, all that type of stuff. So it's kind of just a waiting game at this point. And, you know, I'm just trying my best to stay busy and Like, once again, try not to think about it.
You know what's got to be weird about it, I would think, and you could tell me, is for most people in other jobs, you get done with college, you say, I'm going into the job market, and then you choose the job you want, and you decide what city maybe you want to live in, and what industry you want to go into, which company you want to work for. You don't get to decide all of those things. You can choose some of them. You've chosen to be a football player, obviously, but you don't know what city you're going to be living in like a week. Is that that like an odd part of this?
It is. It is. But for me, like I'm truly excited to like, you know, wherever, whatever opportunity is, you know, put forth in front of me, it's like, it's going to be another experience. It's going to be another adventure for me. Like, you know, living in Seattle, Pacific Northwest, the past 5 years has been awesome. And you never know, we might end up back here, but for me, it's, you know, it's just another opportunity. So wherever that happens, wherever that is, I'm truly excited. So,
Troy Fontano here with us. Troy, we had your buddy, your bookmate, bookend on the other side, Roger Rosengarten, on with us a couple months ago, right before the combine, actually, and he walked through all the training and all the hours spent to get himself ready for the combine. I'm kind of curious, could you walk us through what the last 2-3 months have been, both that build up to the combine and then all of the visits that have followed?
Yeah, so I would say the hardest thing for all five of us that went up to go train in Southern California, me, Ron, Jack Westover, Roger Rosengarten, and Eddie Ufosio. The hardest thing was really like trusting their process. So like the training that you do for the combine is so specific and it's not tailored to like being a football player, because like we're running a 40-yard dash or jumping up in the air, and guys like me, we don't do that too often. So it was a little weird, I guess, in a way, but we had to trust their process. You know, they've been through this so many times, and a lot of guys come in and try to do a lot of extra stuff. And for us, we're so used to like winter conditioning. We're so used to like coming in and having like 8 stations with Coach McKeefrey and then another 4 stations competing. And like at the end of the day, you don't want to move. You don't want to do anything. It was like, it was kind of weird. It was an adjustment for sure to kind of just trust their process because they had been through this so many times. And at the end of the day, we did. We tried to find our ways to kind of, you know, get the extra in because we're just so used to it. Like we're so used to coming in, you know, on optional days and working out, but these guys were just making sure that we didn't get hurt or we didn't get injured. So everything was, because we came in late, you know, we finished playing football January 8th. So we were kind of late to the party. So we kind of, it felt like we were in a rush mentally. But at the same time, they had set out a plan to make sure that we were successful. So yeah, we went through that the first couple months, and then leading up to the combine, we got to the combine, and you know, I had a whole bunch of meetings. Like, as soon as you landed, you drop your bag off and you're headed straight to, well, you go to dinner, then you're headed straight to meetings. And I was, I had like 13 the first night.
Wow.
Then I had like, I think 15 the next night.
Crazy.
Or the next day. So it was jam packed with a whole bunch of people. And for me, my biggest thing was I was super nervous going into the interview process because I just didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what these guys were going to ask me. But it was so funny going into the interviews that it was a lot easier than I thought because the interviews that like I was going through back in my agency back in Southern California with my O-line trainer, with our media guys, with basically everyone in the building on the staff, their interviews were a lot harder than – I guess they were just preparing us for the worst. So when the combine came around, it was super easy. Like it felt like just conversation, you know what I mean? And coming from UW, like a lot of you kind of see how like impactful Coach Peterson really was on this program because everyone that had come through the past 4 or 5 years, even before that, everyone has the same like reputation. Like UW has a really good reputation of guys coming in and like being very genuine and being able to like, just like kind of be yourself. That was the biggest thing for me, was just going there, be yourself. And it was really easy because I wasn't trying to be anyone that I wasn't. I wasn't trying to pretend, you know, I wasn't trying to act or anything like that. I was going in and just kind of displaying everything that I've learned throughout the past 5 years, but you know, everything that my parents have taught me growing up. So yeah, that was super cool. And then everything at the combine is kind of tailored to make you not succeed. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. They schedule everything at night super late. They make you wake up super early in the morning. You don't really have time to, like, eat. You don't really have time to, like, so for me, like, the day before the draft, like, I was pretty light because the 4 or 5 days before that, I'm in meetings, I'm in medical stuff. So, like, the day of, I had to make sure I was chugging a whole bunch of water and eating a whole bunch of food the night before. So it was, you know, it was for sure something I'll never forget. And then, you know, we finally got to do the easy part, was go out there and perform. So, yeah. You know, I was a little disappointed that I didn't get my 40 time. But at the end of the day, offensive linemen aren't drafted off the 40 times. I think it was just more of a personal goal of mine.
You were going to run 4.9, right? You were going to run faster than Roger. I mean, that was your goal.
Me and Roger competing. Me and Roger for sure were competing. He for sure got the best of me. That's hats off to him. He was sliding that day. I was very upset. I got like a 5.01. I wanted the 4.9.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, you're just out there competing with other guys, and it was cool to kind of meet everyone that you had watched film on in the Pac-12 and all that. So, yeah, that was true.
Maybe special. If they and fed you that, enough, right? They obviously didn't feed you. They got to, like, feed the offensive and defensive linemen. That's not right. I mean, yeah, like, we got to call somebody. Yeah, also, like, Troy, I got to tell you, that might be – this was like 5 minutes ago now, because that's like the best long answer I've ever heard here from a guy just recently out of college. But you dropped what might be, I think, the best humble brag I've ever heard. And Brock is a tremendous humble bragger. I should tell you that. You just say, we were a little late because we were playing until January 8th. That's the greatest little humble brag I've ever heard in my life. So subtle, so perfect. Mm-hmm. And I just want to tell you, I caught it and I loved it.
Yeah. Man, you know, when I think back to that day, you know, it stings a lot. It's kind of what's been fueling this process for me. But at the end of the day, you know, it was truly special what we did this past year. And, like, I'll never forget, you know, the guys next to me. It was so awesome to see everyone that pro day. And it felt like we were back again. But now we're kind of all separated. So I guess this is how it works for now. So
well, tell me, we're talking to Troy Faltano here, and one of the things that is maybe a little unique about you, and we've heard this from some of the draft analysts, is you've been a tackle, right? You were a tackle at UW, a left tackle, mm-hmm. and not only do you potentially project there or maybe at guard, but it sounds like you've been pretty open and willing to consider playing anywhere on the offensive line. What do the guys at your agency say? Because my understanding is that playing on the outside pays a whole lot better long term than being on the inside. What makes you willing to consider anything?
This is just going back to when I came to UW. It was like Coach Huff had put me. I basically played every position on the offensive line my entire career. I ended up sticking it out at left tackle, but before then, like, I played everything. And for me, my biggest thing was getting on the field. My thing was, I felt like I could contribute more being out there. And at the end of the day, you got to compete wherever you can get in. You know what I mean? Like, there's guys in the league, in the NFL, that have been around for a really long time. And I'm really excited to kind of soak up knowledge from them. But like I said, I'm just trying to compete wherever that is. And at the end of the day, I do think I'm a tackle. Like, I've heard that a lot. I've heard both. I've heard more tackle than anything. But, you know, there's, like I said before, there's guys in the NFL that are like, have been around for a while. So, you know, you got to be realistic sometimes and get in where you fit in. So, I'm just excited for an opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, this is like, it's crazy to think that this is now a career. This is like my job. So, you know, wherever they're paying me to play, I'm going to play it, and I'm going to play it to my fullest, you know, capability. So
where are you going to be in 6 days? You're going to be at home? You're going to be surrounded around family? Where are you going to be?
Yeah, I'm going to be back home. I got the invite to go to Detroit, but for me, it wasn't really attractive. I once I heard that you can't really bring, you know, I'm Polynesian, so they told me that I was like limited to like 15 people. And I have like 15 people that, like, yeah, I don't know how to explain it. But you know what I mean? Like,
you're Polynesian. When did that happen? When did you become Polynesian?
Yeah, so it's you know, it's not normal to only have 15 family members and have to pick between all of them. But for me, it just made sense to be at home with all the people that I love and be surrounded by everyone that's kind of supported me through this way, through this journey. So, yeah, that I'm going to be back home in Vegas.
Right on.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm struggling here, man. I got to tell you, this interview is a challenge for me, and I'm enjoying the heck out of it. But all I've heard about you from everybody, and Brock talks about this all the time.
What?
He's so nasty, man. You got to see him. He plays with a nastiness, and he's physical, and he's violent, and he's so nasty. The word nasty's come out of your mouth like 1,000 times in talking about Troy Faltano. And then you get him here on the phone,
sure.
And he's like the nicest person we've ever spoken to. Like.
It's like, Ryan Stanek. It's like Ryan Stanek.
I'm having a lot of trouble putting together this idea that you're so nasty with this incredibly nice guy on the phone. How do you do that?
I think it's the, you know, when I roll up my pants and roll up my jersey and have the stomach showing out, I think I turn into a different person. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. It's just like, for me on the field, like I've learned from Coach Huff the past 5 years. I felt like I've always had that, like, you know, that want to like put somebody on their back. Sorry, I gotta watch my language, but yeah, like there's gotta be a want there. And I have that want every day that I play football, you know what I mean? Especially on Saturdays when you're going against someone that's not wearing, you know, your colors. So, it's a mindset thing. I feel like you either have it or you don't. And Coach Huff made sure to make that an emphasis. And, like I try to show that in, the way that I play. So
can I do like 5 rapid fire questions right here? Can we do, and I don't know if that was part of your 28 meetings that you had at the combine, if you did a little rapid fire, but can
we do it all? I've seen it all.
I bet you have. Can we do a little rapid fire? I'm curious how many 30 visits you did. If you had 28 meetings at the combine, how many of these visits across the country did you go do?
So I only had 6 of these. So 6 of the, I've been on the road with some of the guys, and I've heard like some crazy numbers, like 25. And I'm kind of glad I didn't have that many because, I probably would be 350 pounds. Yeah.
How different were those visits than those meetings at the combine?
It was just a lot more, meeting people. Like every meeting was different. Like some people talked about football, some people didn't talk about football at all. But for these meetings, for these visits, like I was able to meet with a lot of the top people in the organization, like the owners, the general managers, finally got to sit down and talk with a lot of the head coaches, get into more depth with the O-line coach, talk football, it almost felt like the recruiting process back in high school. But, you know, like we said before, I don't get to choose where I get to go. So,
The Seahawks involved in any of this, or because of your background with Grubb and Huff and everything else, did you partake in anything with them?
Yeah. So I had a formal meeting with them. They were one of the 28 that I had. And then, I was kind of expecting to see them when I walked in, but I did not. I was very disappointed. Just because I wanted to talk to them and see what the interview, because like we had a lot of the UW guys were talking about it beforehand, like, damn, it's going to be kind of weird, like going into these meetings with Grubb and Huff in there, and then come to find out they weren't there. So, but yeah, I did have a meeting with them.
Last couple ones here. Best dude you played against from your tackle position or up and down the line at the University of Washington. Take your Husky teammates off the board. You know, maybe somebody that could be drafted in this draft Thursday or Friday. Who was just the baddest dude that you had to face in college?
I would tip my hat off to Brandon Dorlish from Oregon. He was a really good player all around. Like, I felt like he was a lot better inside, but he had to play outside in that second game a lot more than he did in the first because of injuries on the D-line very early. I got to match up with him a lot more than I thought I was going to. So,
and then my last one, because I've totally hogged this, and Salt can wrap this sucker
fine
up.
I love it.
The lineman that you look up to, is there somebody growing up in Nevada that you watched as a youngster? And, you know, we hear all the time, Troy, about being an O-lineman. It ain't cool. And a lot of guys go and play defensive line. You strike me, and this draft strikes me, as having a bunch of dudes that love being offensive linemen. I'm curious if there's a guy that whose tape you watch, who you emulate, who you really respect growing up and want to be and play like in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I would. There's so many that I just like watched over the past couple of years. But growing up, honestly, I didn't think I was going to be an offensive lineman. I thought I was going to be a skill my whole life because I didn't play offensive line until like my sophomore year of high school, by the end of my sophomore year. So I would say just watching football growing up, Troy Polamalu is my biggest person that I watched. But I would say offensive line is Trent Williams. I mean, that dude is, you know, he's probably the greatest left tackle of all time, in my opinion. So,
Well, don't say that around, you know, Walter. I mean, Walter, don't say Walter Jones. I have a little conversation with you about him. And Trent Williams.
He's too young. He didn't see Walter, did he?
Yeah, probably not.
You didn't see Walter Jones play, did you?
Yeah. What year were you born, Troy?
I was born 2000.
Oh, come on, Brock. Okay. I mean, geez, like, I show some respect for the youth. Were you downloading the tortured poets department last night at 9 o'clock?
Oh boy.
Who, me?
Yeah. Are you a Swiftie? I mean, were you like everyone else in America, desperate to hear the new album last night?
I have no clue what you're talking about.
All right, I guess you really are an offensive lineman. Much better.
Attaboy.
That's what I was looking for, yes. Troy.
I don't dabble in that world. Fortunately.
Troy, this has been a blast. If you do end up here in Seattle, I know you're going to make a lot of people happy. I wish you could get a chance to see our text line right now and a lot of the things people are saying. I want Troy right now. Great guy. Pick this guy. I audibly laughed when he said he was limited to 15 people. Troy was number one on my board. He just solidified it. He's a priority draft prospect. I hate the Huskies, but now I want him. Just some of the many texts that have come in. You make quite an impression. So hopefully that's the case. Hopefully we see you here at number 16 and you end up here in Seattle. And if not, continued good luck. You are welcome on this show anytime. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you guys so much for having me.
All right,
thank
you, Troy. There you go. There's Troy Faltano. Oh, my gosh. Now, probably wasn't paying attention to Taylor Swift. He was probably downloading the new Pearl Jam album last night, would be my guess. Dark Matter came out yesterday as well, so he's probably downloading that, what with him being born in 2000
and
all.
The draft is about projecting, Salk, and 20 minutes ago you said we're going to get to a Mariner conversation, what I know now, that was not going to happen because this dude, like Roma Dunze, like Roger Rosengarten, like if your mom like Roger Rosengarten,
hear what my mom says, because I know I think Roger Rosengarten's name had something to do with why my mom liked him so much. But I gotta find out what she thought of Troy Faltano.
I was really hoping you guys are gonna ask him just for the continuity of it what his favorite thing to do on a football
field. I thought about
it was
but
my
I
next
it.
I wrote it down right here.
You didn't do it.
It was my next question.
You could have called back
the Vita Vea moment. Just this,
talk about the polar opposite of Vita Vea.
Talk about just mature dudes. And I so love that both Rome and Roger and Troy bring up Chris Peterson. Because Chris Peterson's the one who recruited him there. And this is no shot on Kalen DeBoer. This is no sour grapes. My goodness gracious.
I didn't take it that way.
No, I didn't either. 25-3 is remarkable. But it speaks to OKGs, our kind of guys. Our kind of guys that can look you in the eye. Our kind of guys that can talk to you. Our kind of guys. Now, it's not 85 of them. Not every one of them is that kind of guy. And Vita Vea was wired and built differently as a defensive tackle, and that's fine too. But holy smokes, Roger, Rome, you see why these NFL folks are blown away by him.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a transparency. There's an honesty. And that answer is one of my favorites all time. Are you going to go out to the draft? I turn it down. Well, you know, I'm Polynesian, so we got big families.
That was amazing.
15. Like 15.
Yeah, I can't fit 15. What are you kidding me?
Not even close.
I'd just be offending too many people.
That does tell me, though, by the way, whereas Penix and Knicks were not invited by the NFL, and they're only inviting like 15 dudes, that does tell you he may not be around at 16.
Might not.
That does give you a little indicator, you know, because old Roger in Park Avenue talks to these owners and these GMs and these decision makers and gets a pretty good bead.
I think what we know is he's definitely going to go in the first round, but I think we already knew that. I don't know. I'll hold out some hope that there's still a possibility. And if not, I think there's a lot of pretty good options for the Seahawks in that spot. But, man, I don't know how you could look. You watch him play is obviously a whole lot more important than how he acts on a radio show.
Yep.
But how could you not at least be interested in his story and where he goes after hearing him? Right.
You know, I love those last couple answers, too, of everything. I loved a whole bunch of that. But what just stands out and resonates with me, and I think with scouts as well, Salk, is, I was a skill guy. right until my end of my sophomore year. Same thing with Jackson Powers Johnson. Same thing with a lot of these kind of elite dudes in this draft. They weren't just big bodied, sloppy. Nope. I was a volleyball player, which we talked about earlier this week.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to ask him about that.
I was a dynamic, like, athlete. That's what I was. And then I, you know, just happened to be, you know, a big kid that grew into 250, 260, 280, but carries himself still in that vein, which is what, you know, the great ones at the NFL level do.
Too many more of these visits turn out to be 350. He's got to stay at the combine to keep his weight down.
And then, you know, I love that answer, too, about Trent Williams. Like, yeah, this is a guy that, sure, may have been an athlete growing up, so he wasn't watching, you know, linemen in the of the 90s or what. No, but Trent Williams of today, like, that's my guy.
I like that you thought he watched Walter Jones. It's like,
well, I mean, Walter played till, let's see, 07, 08,
okay, so he was 7.
Yeah, that's fair.
Come on, man.
I got it.
How many offensive linemen can you name from, what, 1983?
The 60s?
Yeah, I mean, like, that feels like a pretty unfair question for him. That was great. I really did enjoy that. And, yeah, just watching a lot of the text. It's very rare that our text line is 100% in agreement to be positive about anything. But, yeah, here they are, man.
And, just by the way, 100%. It wasn't just me saying nasty. It was Booger yesterday
talking about him, right?
I think he dropped 6 nasties on him, too. And once he rolls that little belt, that jersey up and rolls his pants up.
Once he puts his belly out, then he's that's when he becomes like his version of Walter.
Yeah, that's exactly
what I was thinking of. All right. We'll shift gear. Well, actually, we're not even really shifting gears because we got your draft profile. But I did want to tell you guys that Turner had the clock jersey night and 90s night neon cap are coming up, Brock. So get ready to flip the clock forward. T-Mobile Park on April 26th and the 27th versus the Diamondbacks. On the 26th, you turn ahead the clock with the jersey. And the first 15,000 fans score the iconic sleeveless jersey. Then the next day, Saturday, the 27th, Mariners throwing it back with 90s night neon caps. Just make sure you're one of the first 10,000 fans through the gates for
that. Amazing, I want to watch the game tonight.
I'm going to be there a couple days later for Hello Kitty night with Cecily.
Oh.
Yeah. That was a special request from Cecily. Nice.
You know what's amazing is I remember when they wore those jerseys. Like, I can vividly remember that game and Buehner out there with the sleeves off and Flowers at third base and Griffey, obviously, you know, looking unbelievable in that whole getup and uniform. So, yeah, I remember the 90s song. Maybe
pretty darn cool.
Maybe Troy doesn't.
Pretty cool interview with Troy Faltano. If you guys missed any of that, please go find it on the podcast, SeattleSports.com, the Seattle Sports app, or Apple Podcasts, wherever it is. Go listen to Troy Faltano because that was quite the interview. Okay, Brock's got a draft profile. We're going to open up the phone lines. That's all coming up in the final hour of our week. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.